Blog Talk Radio.
We'll be right back.
Let me play one. Let me play one of Mike's one of his tracks. Stand by. Hold on. This is called Spice. I mean, not very radio friendly by terrestrial standards. It's called Give a Fuck. It's called Big Mike P, ladies and gentlemen. The 818. It's called Give a Fuck. Well, it's not really rap. It's kind of like Southern rock slash rap. I like it. It's like,
but this doesn't kick in. It hasn't kicked in yet. When it kicks in,
like,
he gets after it.
But I like it. I mean, it's got kind of a, you know.
Hey, homie. Hey, speed this motherfucker up so I can spit some crazy rap shit to this shit.
I don't give a fuck. Fresh out of jail, jump on the chopper with my tracks like this. Tails rolling in the wind, I be blowing. Bitches on my socks, on my tickets when they hold it. Big ballin', money stay growing. Hitting hard as fuck for the title that I'm holding. Fuck with me, and you know you're getting faded. Baby mama trippin' because my pad just got raided. Oh well, I still don't give a fuck. I'm a squirrel in the world trying to bust the nut. So fuck yeah, motherfucker, keep on bailing. Gangsters, what the fuck they yelling? My lady think I'm crazy, but hey, that's cool. I've been fucking her friend for like a year or two. Mike, please. I don't give a fuck. I don't give a fuck. I don't give a fuck. Fuck, 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 fuck. Jump on my chopper, jump, jump on my chopper. Jump on my chopper with the drag pipe this tail. I don't give a fuck. I don't give a fuck. I don't give a fuck. Fuck, 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 fuck. Jump on my chopper, jump, jump on my chopper. Jump on my chopper with the drag pipe this tail. Back up. Give me 50 feet before I have to knock your ass out in the street. My colors, my colors, my colors, my all. With the colors upon me, one soldier's hand fall. Tell me, what have you left me? What have I got? Last night my big homie got shot. Motherfucker, get back. It's time for some action. No fist fight. Strictly rap packing. Taking up on any motherfucker who's asking. I got the blunder so you know I'm straight blasting. Trouble, chaos, no pity. I grew up in the ghetto so my attitude is shitty. Some motherfucker don't say I didn't warn ya. Crazy motherfucker coming straight out of a coima. God damn, that's just how it is. A bad motherfucker known to handle my biz right.
I don't give a fuck. I don't give a fuck. I don't give a fuck. Fuck, 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 fuck. Jump on my chopper. Jump, jump on my chopper. Jump on my chopper with the drag pipe this tail. I don't give a fuck. I don't give a fuck. I don't give a fuck. Fuck, 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 fuck. Jump on my chopper. Jump, jump on my chopper. Jump on my chopper with the drag pipe this tail.
High bars, low rider cars. Neighborhood star at the neighborhood bar. Some say I'm crazy, but hey, that don't faze me. Maybe that's a reason five bitches want my baby. Mike P, living straight raw, bad to the bone, I'm a rebel with a cause. Summertime, motherfuckers get the bleeding. Hotter than a motherfucker, good enough reason. Eyes wide open for the punk ass cops. Especially the ones with no lights on the top. Hit the throttle, let the clutch straight pop. Do a little willy when I burn out the spot. They yell at danger, beware if you enter. It's just another day with this crazy 1% of my
crew. I don't give a fuck. I don't give a fuck. I don't give a fuck. Fuck, 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 fuck. Jump on my chopper. Jump, jump on my chopper. Jump on my chopper with the drag pipe this tail. I don't give a fuck. I don't give a fuck. I don't give a fuck. Fuck, 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 fuck. Jump on my chopper. Jump, jump on my chopper. Jump on my chopper with the drag pipe.
This program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Basically, the 1% of the motorcycle community who operates outside the law.
Their total focus is on hatred for the enemy. They have the policy of shoot or kill on sight if they can.
It's bullshit. Law enforcement just tries to paint this picture to the media. Just cover up their bullshit, cover up their lies, and I just like to say fuck them. That's straight from Mike P.
Jump on your bike, let's hit the road.
Come on.
Fuck the 5-0, man, we out of control.
Hey.
I'm a bad motherfucker, rider through the night. Yeah. A 50 motherfucker and I love to fucking fight. Picture me rolling on my chopper on red. No love for the other side, no need to be friends. Hit the gas, homie, you gotta keep on pushing. Got an out, chin check, so don't you need an ass. Put the ticket, that's a ticket. Man, I ain't gonna pay. Got a dude 30 days locked up in CJ. Twist the throttle, let's get the rolling. My drag pipes on my bike, get the blowin'. A third motherfucker street calling me. Like a mom calls the kids when it's time to eat. Don't approach me, homie, like the shit all good. I'm like half the motherfuckers that live in my hood. I'ma send you a roll until the mall. Put 10 in the clip and 1 in the hole. Fuck what you heard, homie, I'ma always hit a bar. My whole voice might rubble, but we never ever fall. At the end of the day, we can always stand tall. The gov don't like me, oh fucking well. I guess you can call me the angel from hell. Give a mad fuck.
Hey.
Run up in my face and get your bitch ass punked. You can shoot me down, but you can kill my pride.
Yeah.
Little finger to the sky, homie, let me ride.
Come on.
Kid from the ghetto, east side of the vibe.
Yeah.
Motherfuckers get snuffed when they walk outside. I'm all in, cause it's all or nothing. And when I leave this bitch, I'm leaving with something. Fuck the law, I'm gonna make my ends. Drinking 40 to the brain from my brothers in the pen. Motherfuckers love to hate when it's under their breath. And then they run like a bitch when it's time to death. I don't rap punchlines, I just rhyme the truth. And speak what's on my mind when I hit the booth. To all my fallen comrades, I like to say rest in peace. No more living life in the belly of the beast, Mike P.
Family was just looking for ways to make ends meet. The Energy Saving Assistance Program paid for upgrades to our house that would have otherwise been out of our pocket.
To see if you qualify, call 866-597-0597.
Difficulties some trouble with the server right now. Some people aren't holding. I asked, I said hello and everything, but didn't hear anything. So we're just going to... when this clears up. Yeah, the bad part is I can't control the server. I can control everything else, but...
Hi, I'm Gerald. I'm a sign up for the care program.
See if you can get it to work. I can't do some crazy shit when this happens.
No, a guy in a Mercedes pulled.
Let's see. It's just kicking and sending out of here right now. Let's see if I can get this going. New number from Michigan, 810. Let's see what we have here.
Hi, I'm Gerald, and I signed up for the kit.
I hate it when they do this.
Hi, I'm Gerald, and I signed up for the care. Hi, I'm Gerald, and I signed up for the care.
Okay, good. Well, we have lots to talk about. So without further ado, I kind of wanted to get into some of the other things we didn't get a chance to talk about yesterday. Because we obviously talked about who you are personally, but now we're going to talk about some of the things relative to your career. I kind of thought we should probably start off with Sons of Anarchy, since that's what most people obviously are listening to or want to hear about, I should say. First off, for those that don't know, obviously you play Marcus Alvarez. I can't speak today. First question, is Marcus similar to Emilio? In fact, are most of your characters similar to yourself in some manner, shape, or form?
It depends. You know, I've done over 120 characters over the years. I'll say that, Bob, between about 120.
And here for your head. I am the horseless henchman.
I think you mean the headless horseman.
No.
Have a sleep.
Why?
Because you guys can see me.
You're not you when you're hungry. That person's Halloween satisfaction.
Don't talk radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to a very special Saturday edition of SamPro Radio. I know that most of you were expecting us to have our show yesterday, and I apologize for that. It's been quite the whirlwind this week for me, professionally and personally. So I thought it might be a good idea to go ahead and switch the show to today, first and foremost, because most of you are off today, so you can't actually listen in. And then second of all, it's always a great opportunity for the guest itself to be able to have individuals to call in to ask those questions and to get to know him. So I think it's always important to be able to give both of those entities to you guys. So, hence, here we are, obviously. So I'm very excited. Today's guest is obviously going to be Joseph Julian Soria. Not only is he an individual who has been on Sons of Anarchy before, but additionally a number of different dramatic series, as well as providing us entertainment on Army Wives, which, as I understand it, he has just been picked up as a regular for that series. So I'm extremely excited to say that he is the person coming on our show today. Should be quite an interesting transition here, because last time, as you know, we had Emilio Rivera on the show, and I wanted to do a quick shout-out to him, because I know just the other day his wife had referenced 23 years of sobriety. Absolutely amazing feat. He is, in and of itself, quite the amazing person himself, but just to accomplish something such as that is just not anything that we need to overlook, obviously. So I wanted to definitely make it a point to be able to sit and to discuss that for just a second, because I know full well, even though I've not fallen victim to alcohol or drug abuse, I know in the past, of course, until very recently, nicotine was my drug of choice, and so it's still an ongoing struggle for myself in trying to get off and to stay completely sober as it speaks to that addiction. So kudos to him. So my dear friend Emilio Rivera, I just wanted to say again thank you so much for coming on the show, and so very proud of you to hear about your accomplishments. So we don't want to keep Joseph on hold, so let's go ahead and get him going here and see what he has to say to us today.
Hello.
Well, hi there.
How you doing?
I'm better. How are you doing?
I'm a bit tired. I got literally about 2 hours sleep, but
No. Great. I'm making you stay up after you've had no sleep. Wonderful. Now I feel guilty.
No, it's a great thing. It's a great thing.
Yes, I definitely do. I'm really, really excited, and I have all these very interesting questions for you. So this should be interesting, and hopefully some of our audience members will be able to give you something different and interesting to talk about, too. I kind of wanted to start off the interview by asking, this is quite the rare occasion in that you have two qualities that resonate two different things here. It's strange. First of all, the last interview that I did on SamPro Radio, of course, was Emilio Rivera. And coincidentally, obviously, you both obviously not only played in the same movie, but you both have a tendency to play what we call those antagonistic roles, obviously.
Yes.
So I was curious to ask a couple questions about that. First off, does your strength lie in producing an on-screen character whose somewhat morals and ideals can be corrupt at times, or has your best work, do you think, lied in a character, let's say, for instance, such as Hector off of Army Wife?
I believe my best work is actually yet to be seen, and maybe some of it will be seen in the next three episodes of Army Wives, which is great, and that's showing vulnerability. That's where I think my strength lies. So all my characters actually come from a vulnerable place. I start there because it is what I believe people relate to, and it's if you come from a vulnerable place, people are more inclined to feel for your character and actually care, as opposed to just playing a little one-dimensional and being an ass or whatever the case may be. because of my upbringing and some stuff that happened to my mom and dad and being abusive and stuff like that, that having to do that was really to allow myself to go there. Obviously, you know, it's off stage. I'm not actually hitting the girl and stuff, but I have to commit to it as if I am. That's intention needs to be in my eyes. It needs to be in that split second, even though it's just half a second, whatever, that I make that move. I have to commit that I'm going to hit this girl. And that was one time where playing the antagonist was like, man, I felt really bad about it. Like, are you okay? And so now, you know, I was right after the scene was done, I was making sure that she was okay. And I was like, man, it shook me. It shook me. It actually shook me.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Yeah, that was one of the questions that I had in here, which is to what degree or at what point, for instance, if a director comes to you or somebody on set says to you, you know what, I'm asking you to do this in a particular scene. And if you are largely uncomfortable with that, I guess, do you have a drawing line? Do you yourself individually say, I will not do this?
No, I don't. When you get on a job, I used to have them come to a point where I found something. If I feel something is unnecessary, then like it's not going to make the scene any more powerful or something, then I'll object and I'll give my opinion. But I'm usually all in. I mean, it hasn't been the case where I haven't been all in. If I feel like I'm putting myself in danger or something, maybe with stunts, then I'll, you know, that's why they have stuntmen. But so far,
This is a good thing, definitely. But, you know, I mean, obviously one has to ask, because sometimes I know, depending on the character, you know, like Emilio had talked about that, and a couple of other times I've talked to individuals where they do something that they are just so uncomfortable with, from a moral standpoint, or you just don't agree with. And it's hard to try to project that, even though it's an acting thing, as you know, you're still doing this to some degree, and so one has to think about that, of course. So it lends the other question, which is, do you have a particular place that you go inside of yourself or you go to something else, I should say, to get that momentum to project this, what we would call maybe a so-called evil action or evil person to an audience?
I'll speak on a specific character. I played a character in Chico in a film called Crank High Voltage, and that character was just really evil. He was an evil character. He had all these tattoos, I mean, all over his face, all over his torso and back and everything. And when I went to the audition, I felt too calm. I don't feel like the character. And what I did is I just started mind-fucking myself and just, like, started, I'm not racist, but I started, like, just started picking people out, like, white, Asian, black, and started just, like, having all these negative viewpoints on them and thinking that they were thinking things about me, and I psyched myself into this mentality, so I was pissed. And that got me to where I needed to be. I walked into the room, and I was, like, I went off on this. I just walked into the room, and just, like, I was in this place that was where I needed to be. Just, I was upset and didn't give a fuck. Type of attitude, and that was right on point. That was right on point with the character. So I just starts going into that place, and it's not just one place; it's different place, with inside me that I attach to.
I gotcha. And do you think that's made you more of a well-rounded character? Do you think, meaning as far as an actor goes, are you more well-rounded because you've played both sides of the fence? Do you think? Meaning good guy and bad guy. I said, do you feel that it's made you more well-rounded, even though the bulk of what you do is Mr. Bad Guy, so to speak, and now that you've had this, you know, transition as far as with Army Wives goes, do you think, have you taken anything away from being the antagonist? Anything that kind of enriches you as far as character?
Okay. No, I don't think any size. I could play a villain just as easy as I can play, an antagonist as easy as I can play a protagonist.
Okay. Gotcha. All right, well, let's step back a little bit here now. I know that back in college that served to be the gateway where you had obtained a portion of teaching relative to your acting profession. So, question, how does the average individual transition into the field with a somewhat limiting education? meaning that you haven't had a years and years of formal training.
You jump in head first, and that's what I did. I think it's working out so far. I mean, you know, what happened was, like I said, I took a theater class, fell in love with the idea of making a living by creating characters and telling stories. As soon as I was done with the class, I walked up to the instructor, and I said, I'd like to set up a meeting with you and kind of get what is the beginning stages of how do I go about making a career of this, or where, how do I get in, so to speak. And we set up that meeting, and at the meeting, so, you know, you need to get a headshot and a resume. I said, well, what's a headshot?
Right.
And so tell me what that was. And I just went online and started looking up photographers and then going to looking in this magazine, this paper called Backstage West, and looking for photographers and agents inside there. And just started asking questions, you know, just always asking questions and seeking answers, reading books. There's a store out here called Samuel French, which is a bookstore for actors, and had a bunch of plays and books on the business. So I went in there, grabbed a book on the business side of it, and then obviously about a book about filmmaking.
Sure.
And just there. And then, just like I said, as I moved along, I asked more questions.
Gotcha. Now, was there ever occasion where your passion for life had resided elsewhere? Because I know that previously you had served in a security position for Universal Studios. That's part of your resume, obviously. But did you ever weigh back, just looking back and saying, you know what, I really wanted to be this and I didn't, or maybe I should have tried this? Any of those sort of thoughts?
I mean, I played baseball for 9 years, like Little League, and then I played football in high school. So, I mean, I've always loved sports. I would have loved to have been an athlete. I think I should have gotten to soccer. I would have had a better chance at that one. But, no, I think if anything, we could say it would have been baseball. But it's hard. Being where I'm at now, it's very hard for me to say, like, oh, I wish I would have done something else.
Sure.
Because I'm truly in love with what I do. And I'm glad my journey has brought me here.
That's what I thought, actually. The only one thing that I would have thought of is obviously your athletic basis there. I would have pictured you possibly in a professional setting as it relates to athletics. That was my one thought. Maybe you wanted to be a professional athlete at some point.
Or boxing.
Or model.
Or box. Or maybe, hey, who knows? But boxing's another one. I've always loved boxing. My grandfather was a boxer, and he used to, when I was just real little, he would, you know, put his hands up like the mitts and everything. And when I was little, I used to go out and fight in the streets for fun. Like, and I didn't think of it like I was being a bully, or it was for fun. Let's fight,
sure.
You know. And my mom,
sure.
One time, my mom, she was getting her hair done, hair and nails, one of those, and she asked where I was. She was looking around. She said, "Can we see Joseph?" And they go, "I think you went out back with the other kids." And she went back there. And she sees me, and I'm like, come on, let's fight. I was talking to some kid, and he didn't want to fight. I was like, come on, let's do it. And she goes, so it's Joseph, get over here. And I go, Mom, I can take him. Like, I didn't look at my mom like, oh shit, I'm in trouble. I was like, Mom, you know, back me up here. You know what I mean?
I imagine.
So maybe boxing could have been another avenue for me.
I gotcha. So I want to switch gears just a little bit, because for myself personally, I think what I find always intriguing is to ask individuals what drives them as far as in certain areas of their life, because I think it's fascinating. One area that I want to bring notice to, is you have engaged on prior occasions in different events where the mission there is to provide either financial aid or awareness to those who are less fortunate, obviously. Note that you have opted to, in the past, offer contributions to the MS Society, and I know in 2011 you were an able-bodied participant in the Tough Mudder Ride to benefit the Wounded Warriors Project. So do maybe expound upon your reasoning, meaning is there a personal reason why you have an attachment to either one of these organizations, and how do you feel actors as a whole can utilize their Hollywood success, I should say, to further ensure that a worthy cause gains more recognition?
First question, yeah, it's a personal thing for me in regards to both both MS and Wounded Warriors. With the MS, a friend of mine has MS. He found out, I believe it was three years ago now. And it's been 3 or 4 years. And I've been contributing to his part in the MS walk, or the things that he associates himself with. Whenever he does something, I support him, whether it be attending or if I could, you know, give some financial aid, I'll do that to find a cure for that. And then also, in regards to Wounded Warriors, my uncle is a Vietnam vet. Actually, I think two of my uncles are Vietnam vets. And that he wasn't wounded physically, but, you know, mentally, it was a toll on him. So I always, just to kind of give and show my support to our troops, even before Army Wives, was something and it's fun too. You know, going and running those courses is really cool, and it's a camaraderie with everybody. It's a really cool event.
I imagine so, definitely. I mean, do you think that... I was just going to say, I was going to touch on that, as a matter of fact. Do you ever think that, or do you ever feel that, this has been cited before, actually, by other actors or individuals I've talked to in the celebrity realm, in society today, nowadays, most people look to the celebrities or people with status because they know that they might further ensure the success of a worthy cause as far as recognition or financially and that kind of stuff. How do you think that, I mean, do you really feel that it's instrumental that that they need those celebrities to get the word out there? I mean, I guess I find that a little disheartening, but, I mean, I'm very encouraged by the fact that celebrities go out there and they take their time and their efforts and put into it. Do you think it's possible that Hollywood is doing all that they can do on that side of the fence as far as furthering worthy causes and organizations?
To answer your first part of the question, do I think it's necessary? Do they need it? No. Is it influential? Yes. You know, people pay attention. People pay attention who the spotlight's on. So, if you know, you like someone for their work or how they look or whatever the case may be, if they're talking about something, you know, and you're gonna tune in to find out what's going on. So it definitely, I think I answered the question. It definitely helps and can be a great tool to have someone with a high status or, you know, celebrity status or whatnot to bring attention to certain topics. Good.
Definitely. I would agree with that, certainly. Okay, we're going to delve, or we're going to start, instead of doing the television side of things, I would prefer to do the film side of things first. I noticed that you give off the impression that you have a proficiently accurate intuition upon selecting performances on the big screen. And I say that because your presentation in the four films I'm about to mention not only are all premiered at Sundance Film Festival, but ultimately one of them proved to be the third highest selling independent film in the festival's history, that being, of course, Hamlet 2. Other three films, namely, are, of course, All She Can, High School, and, of course, Philly Brown. So a couple questions there. To start off, and this is in your own opinion, how do you feel that platforms such as Sundance serve to secure a stable following for a film, or maybe offer credibility to any endeavor that's out there?
You're asking what does Sundance do for the project?
Yes, that's correct.
It's putting a stamp of your if you get into Sundance, it's looked at as, you know, how it got to have that stamp of approval or like a value, I don't know. But all I knew is that's where you wanted your films to go to. Okay, when I got into the industry, like, oh, yeah, I got a film in a Sundance. I'm like, what's Sundance? Like, when, you know, when I first heard about it, what's Sundance? I don't know. And then they're like, oh, it's this great film festival. You know, only the best films go there. And so
sure.
That's something that's, what is usually associated with that title, having a film in Sundance. So it does hold some weight.
Sure.
It gives your film some weight, it gives it that blue check mark, if you will, that Twitter check mark, gives it a verification, so that it's a good,
sure,
quality.
Definitely. And in your own opinion, that was my other second thing I wanted to ask about. As far as looking at, obviously, Sundance typically is pretty infamous for those independent films, as compared to you doing, like, a feature film, let's say. Do you have a preference on working on independent films versus those that are maybe higher budgeted or feature films? Does it matter to you? Personally.
You know what? I choose projects for different reasons. Sometimes, I'm going to answer it in a long form. And the way I answer
sure.
it is I choose my projects for different reasons. Sometimes it's strictly even comes down to one scene. Sometimes it's the character. Sometimes it's the people I'm working with. A film as a whole, I mean, I may choose a film because it's a big studio film, and it's going to get me more exposure. With exposure can lead to more fans and more fans, more popularity. If you're grabbing the audience's attention, and people want to see more of you, that's gonna create more value to the industry and to the studios. So that being the case, I would love to do big projects, but indie films tend to be the more meatier. That's where you find more meatier work. You know, the meatier characters and honestly the better stories. So,
okay.
To say which would I choose, if we're just talking about strictly about the work, then I would say indie film. But you can have a lot of fun with some big budget projects. I mean, Crank wasn't a huge budget, but we had a nice budget. It was like, I think, $20 million or something like that. It was a nice little chunk of change, and I had a lot of fun in that movie, blowing stuff up and shooting guns. It was fun.
Sounds like a great day's work, definitely. Now, if you look back comparatively at each of these Sundance Festival films that you've done, now, had you ever had a concern or a preoccupation that the way that the audience perceived your character portrayals in those films might be different characteristically as it relates to ones on the television characters? Because obviously what you play on TV as compared to how you play in film is a little bit different. So was there ever a concern for you in terms of how the audience will perceive you in either venue or either forum?
In the big picture, no, because it just shows my range for my work. But at the same time, you know, even with Billy Brown playing the character MC Wyatt, when that role came to my attention through Gina Rodriguez, who stars in the film, and she's like, you got to do this project, you got to do this character. And I read the breakdown for it, and then I read the material, and I was like, oh my God, I know what's going to happen if I play this character. People are going to hate me, you know? I go, but hey, that means I did my job. It's me personally. Part of it, I don't want people to hate me, but then again, you know, remember that it's just a movie. You know what I'm saying? I'm playing a character.
Exactly. It's a portrayal.
But I don't ever think, oh man, this is gonna look bad upon me if I play this character. No.
I understand. Now, do you think that in any way that performing in the film's meaning of an independent nature have prepared you in some way for your eventual, like, let's say, larger budgeted films, such as The Fast and the Furious or Crank High Voltage? Was there anything you took away from the indie experience that carried over to major film?
You know, I think I can say that working on indies, it shouldn't have, but I guess it has. You know, when you're working on those small budget indie films, the budget's tight, and you got to be on point. When they call action, you better be prepared, because you know, we're working with what we got, and what we got is what we got. You know what I'm saying? So you better make the best of it. So I guess, and even on the bigger projects, you take that mentality and you're on point as you should always be, though. To the bigger projects where a lot more money is being put in, you got to kind of that knowing that, or going through the experience of working on the smaller projects and knowing that maybe you only have a few takes to get it, You take that to the bigger projects, and you know, you could be saving them. You could be saving them money by being up and having everything prepared.
Definitely. Makes a lot of sense, that certainly. Okay, I want to shift gears just a little bit again. Very recently on my sister show, Sin Chat Corner, I was very, very blessed that I had the opportunity to interview, if I could talk today, the very infamous Douglas Spain, who cast you and your part in the production of Mission Park. For those that are unaware, Mission Park tells a colorful story of four friends whose lives, their paths find them on opposite ends of the law. First off, did you and Douglas maintain some sort of a friendship or camaraderie or relationship prior to the film's creation?
No. I found out about the film, I believe, a couple years. It had been on IMDb, and I'd seen my friends were in it, Walter Perez and Jeremy Ray Valdez, and you know, I was like, I wanted to be a part of the project because my friends were doing it. So actually, me and Jeremy Ray Valdez had just finished up another film called All She Can, which you know about from Sundance. And on the way back on the plane ride, I was like, you know, what's going on next? He's like, oh, Mission Park. I'm like, dude, what is that movie about? I go, I want in. I go, I'll be I just want to be with the guys. You know what I'm saying? I was like,
right.
I go, I'll be an extra. You know?
Like, oh my God, really?
Not literally, but you know what I'm saying. I was just like, no, I want to be. Just my point was, I want to be in the movie. And
right.
So they're like, you know, all the main roles are locked in, and I was like, ah, all right, well, whatever. If there's something there, let me know. Well, the casting directors were really pushing for me that they did All She Can. They were somehow tied into Mission Park. I guess they were doing the casting for that as well. The local Texas hires, and they're like, you know what, you got to see this kid, JJ Soria. He just did All She Can. We think he'd be great for the role of Derek, and they presented the audition to my agent, like, you know, we got a call about this film, Mission Park, here's the material, I looked at the material, and I was like, oh, wow, there's specifically one scene in the film that really would give me the opportunity to show what I can do, and that's how it was presented to me. I mean, I knew about it, but I didn't know I had a shot at it until, you know, having to audition for it.
Sure.
And then eventually, a little further insight on that is I had to turn down, choose between doing End of Watch, the Jake Gyllenhaal film, and doing Mission Park. And because they had presented an offer to me on End of Watch, and I was like, man, I know that movie was going to be great. I knew it was from the jump. I read the script, and the director was awesome, the writer-director who wrote End of Watch, and now also directing it, had written Training Day. So I was like, I was a fan of his work and was elated about the opportunity to work on this project. But I had to go with my gut. I'm like, nah, I got to do Mission Park. This is going to show what I can do. Yeah, as opposed to the other role. The other role wasn't a character that I felt like I wouldn't be remembered. And in Mission Park, you'll definitely remember the character I'm playing.
My goodness gracious. That'll be wonderful, actually. Do you think it you might collaborate again in the future with him, or is there a discussion of that?
With Douglas? Yeah, I'm sure it'll happen again.
Wonderful. He is such an amazing person. Very, very true to himself. Very, very honest. Very accomplished. There's one bad word I could say about him, and obviously we all share the same friend, and Rolando Molina. I'm sure that you know Rolando, or Rolo, I should say.
Rolo, that's my boy. But I have tons of bad words. I got tons of bad words to say about Douglas Spain. Just kidding.
I was just going to say, I'm just waiting for you to say, just kidding, because I know that was going to be going there, obviously. It's amazing. I mean, the collaboration of all the different fellows, actually. I was curious to ask you this, because obviously you were on set and I wasn't. I saw that Sean Patrick Flannery had been cast in there. And to be honest with you, I just looked at him and it just resonates. He's too, not clean cut, but he just seems atypical for this film, or is it my imagination?
Atypical? I don't even know what that means.
Meaning, Well, like, for instance, obviously, you know, you look at a film and you look at the other characters around it, like people who've been cast and what they'd be good for character-wise, and it just seems as though he just, I don't know, he doesn't seem to fit within the course of the film. Does that make sense?
You know, yeah, I hear what you're saying. And, but he never popped that out of me as not fitting in. I think he did his job. It didn't feel wrong when I watched the film. You know, here's how I can put it. He didn't take me out of it. So
okay,
there was. So I thought he fit fine. He was. I think he was. Yeah.
Yes, he is actually fine. He doesn't have to be a friend of yours, is he? Because he's gorgeous, and I'm in love with him. So if I can get a date, I'd be really happy.
That's fine. I wasn't referring to, but yeah, it's okay.
I was referring to that fine. I just went on that limb right there, like, oh my God, is he pretty? Because he is damn pretty. I just got to say that. Not a Charlie Hunnam, but he's okay. We like that. I'm a girl. What do you expect? Come on, give me a break. Finally, speaking to this film, just curious. What do you want the audience to take away from this experience? Watching you on this particular performance, what do you want the audience to take away from this as far as your performance goes?
In Mission Park, I really want them to, because he's initially an antagonist in the film, I want people to feel for him.